Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, welcome everyone. This is going to be an excellent episode with provider attorney Les Sandoval, and he is one of the top converting lawyers in our entire network. He's consistently been converting about 50% of the leads that we send him, meaning that 50% of the clients elect to hire him for some amount of service with his firm. So he's, needless to say, he's doing extremely well with the leads in our program. But more importantly, he's a classic solo practitioner attorney, meaning that from soup to nuts, he handles all aspects of the case. He has a little bit of part-time help, but for the most part, he wants to keep the hands on the wheel for all aspects of the case. And as a result, has some really good advice and guidance for especially attorneys that are sole practitioners, really small firms, and how to communicate that as a value statement to the attorney, to the client, excuse me. And also has gotten very creative in the ways in which he can limit the scope of the involvement in a case down to very specific tasks. He has a lot of pay-as-you-go approaches because every client that he speaks with, he focuses on delivering some service to them immediately or in a way that they can afford it, so that no one's turning away, you know, just because of a financial barrier. And so he has a lot of ideas and suggestions and ways in which you can start thinking about how to offer these types of options on either a pay-as-you-go where you're handling the case, the aspects of your case yourself, or even a more of a self assisting the client to proceed pro se in that fashion as well. So without further ado, enjoy this episode with provider attorney Les Sandoval from Albuquerque, New Mexico. All right, Les, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, really happy to have you on here, and it's been a real great experience working with you over the years. And I think, as far as I know, you're one of our top converters as far as effectiveness in converting leads into paying clients. But how long has it been now that we've been working together? It's got to be at least a couple of years, right?
I see this next September will be 2 years.
That's right.
About a year and a half or so.
Right. So maybe we could start, Les, by just giving everyone a little bit of background, kind of how you got started and got your office started and the area you're practicing and the areas of law.
Well, I used to work for a couple big firms here. Didn't like the way they did certain things, so I went on my own in 2006. Usually get referrals by word of mouth. And then in September or so, August or September of 2014, I got a call from one of your representatives. And I was always very leery of these things because I've gone into other referral systems where you pay a flat fee per month or things of that nature, and they never really worked very well. So Graham Scott, the representative, says, well, try it out. He threw me a lead, worked out really well, and I said, okay, if they're willing to put their money where their mouth is, I will be doing the same thing because of the fact that, it worked really well. So all of the other places, the other referral companies, you have to sign up with them first and you're stuck for a year or so and not knowing whether you're going to get anything out of it. So before I even signed up, Graham Scott had given me the lead, and it worked out fine, and it works out great. It's a great system.
Yeah, and so what is the area you're doing primarily family law in New Mexico, right?
I do family law in New Mexico. I do some bankruptcy. I do some minor criminal representation, nothing too big, and some ambulance chasing, a little bit of PI, but primarily domestic relations, which is family law.
Right. And I think we're about to start experimenting with estate planning, right?
Yeah, and I do some of that too.
And then maybe to give some of those that are on the call a little context on kind of how things have been going and what you've been doing, maybe you can share a little bit about, roughly your conversion rate or, return or whatever you feel comfortable with, just to put in perspective kind of your experience level and what you've been able to accomplish with the leads so far.
I usually close about 50% of the leads that I get. The leads can vary anywhere from custody to divorce, things of that nature. But if anything, with the unbundled services, it allows you to pick and choose. You can always make something, some money out of the clients because they need something. So whether they can't afford to hire you completely as a retainer, well, then you can enter into an agreement that says you'll help them draft the documents, or that you will do a limited entry of appearance for a one-time hearing, and that way they can afford the representation, and then you're in and out once the, for example, once the hearing is done and the order is entered from the hearing, your obligation to that client is done, and you move on. And most of the time, they'll end up retaining you for additional services, so it worked out pretty well.
Right, and is that, I mean, 50% of the leads is outstanding. I mean, that's for various different kinds of services, it's a really good return. Is that for the clients that you speak with, or is that total amount of leads 50% you convert?
It's usually the clients that usually the total amount, and the key is sometimes getting them, calling back right away, making sure that they don't feel abandoned. It's the quicker you call them, the easier it is to close the lead. But it's just common customer service. If you call them back relatively quickly, they're happy. A lot of times they can't afford you. Oh, I'll call you back 3 or 4 weeks, and they do, and they'll hire you for the hearing. Because it'll take them 2 or 3 weeks to save up for the hearing, but the hearing's 3 or 4 weeks down the road, and they have a goal to work on, and then usually they'll come up with a little bit more funding to keep you on board because they're going to need somebody beyond that one time. So it works out really well.
Right. Okay, well, maybe we can kind of just go start to finish, dive into the process that you use, because to close 50% of the clients that the leads that we're sending you into paying clients, it also means you got to get a lot of folks on the phone. And so maybe you could start with how you currently receive the leads. Is it through email? Do you get the text messages, or do you use the app to receive the leads? And are you the first person to make the call, or do you have an assistant that does that? Maybe we could start with, just that initial step there.
I'm the first person to make the call. I usually get it through an email. And then once I get that email lead, I'll call them as soon as I can. I'll make the inquiry. If they answer, there's a good chance of closing the lead and converting them into a client. If they don't answer, it just depends. Sometimes you think they, the quicker you can get a hold of them, I do that because I used to have an assistant that did that and they didn't really know how to, what to say, how to answer certain questions, things of that nature. So I do that myself. But it's, it lets the client know that the lawyer, you're actually talking to a lawyer, not the paralegal or somebody down the food chain.
Right, exactly. And they actually get a chance to speak with the attorney. And about on average, how much time goes by from when the lead, when you call the lead, as soon as you get the notification? I mean, I know sometimes you're in court and kind of varies given that you're the one that's calling them, but how quickly do you try to get back to them if possible?
Usually within the day. And then, for example, let's say somebody sends something at 6 o'clock at night and I'm gone. I'll check my emails and I usually get back with them first thing the following morning. So usually within a 24-hour period. Sometimes if it's on a weekend, my family time is on the weekend. So if they'll send something on a Friday, then I'll call them first thing on a Monday.
Right, exactly. And if you're not able to reach them, do you usually send them an email, send them a text message in the meantime, letting them know someone will be in touch with them, or you just get back to them as quickly as you can with a phone call?
I'll either leave a voicemail and or follow up with the email because most of the time they provide both a phone number and a email.
Right, gotcha. And if you, when you call the clients and you say get a voicemail, how often do you follow up? And if so, at what frequency do you do it, and how many times will you give someone a call before you kind of say, hey, if they're not getting back to me, maybe it's not, maybe we're not a good fit, or maybe they've already gotten help.
I usually follow up once or twice. Any more than that, you're following the fine line between following up and bugging. And I figured if you've left a message and they wanted to hire you, they'll call you back. Sometimes they're like, oh, so for example, I have a bunch of truck drivers as clients, and they'll say, sorry, man, I was out of the not out of the office. I was on my route, and I can only talk to you on certain days. Things like that, but once or twice.
Yep, I would agree with that as well. I mean, that's what we've seen across the board is usually two or three calls. You call them once, then maybe you call them at a different time of day, and then when you have some downtime, or even some attorneys will call, maybe do a few calls after hours, maybe 5, 6 o'clock before they head home to try to catch some of the folks that you know, are working during the day, and, you know, just, you know, those are obviously the types of clients you want to connect with. So, but after two or three calls, it kind of becomes a lost leader, and those that, you know, are serious will eventually, you know, get the voicemails and get back to you if they've been too busy.
Exactly.
Yep. Okay. So now, so let's say you get the client on the phone. Maybe you can take it through the initial process of that call, and then what the goal of that call is, whether it be, are you just kind of touching base with them and scheduling them to come in, or do you kind of go in depth about their case, and do you talk about kind of the cost and so forth? How does that call usually go, and what's your primary goal in making that initial contact?
I will call them, see what the issue is, see what they're looking for, see if they have any pending hearings, see if anybody's filed anything, when their response dates are due, if they've just been served, things of that nature. You want to get to that. You want to find out who's out at the party, of course, for a conflict check right away. But I find if you give them about 5 or 10 minutes, they're happy because most other lawyers won't even talk to them. And then that gets them in, and I usually am able to retain them as a client that way.
Right. Okay, so when you chat with them and, you know, get a feel for the type of issue that they're working on, whether it be custody, visitation, or divorce, do you then say, what do you say to them to then get them in the office? And is your initial consultation in the office also at no additional cost, or is there a fee for that? You can walk us through a little bit more specifics on how that goes.
I usually charge a fee, but I waive it. For example, on these clients, I'll say it depends on how long I talk with them on the initial telephone call. So I'll get them in, and I'll charge them a relatively low consultation fee, and then I'll tell them I'll waive it if you hire me. Well, I pay for the same thing twice, and most of them end up hiring me. If not, I'll get the consultation fee, and they're done. If they can't afford the consultation fee, then I've spent about 5 or 10 minutes, but I know if they can't afford the consultation fee, then they can't afford the retainer. So, you know, it kind of weeds out some of the cases that way.
Right. And what's your typical consultation fee?
It ranges. I mean, it depends on the issue. For example, if they want drafting or something like that, drafting assistance, I'll say it's going to be $100. It's usually no more than $100.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you, if you're going to book someone in for a consultation, do you have them make that payment to you via credit card over the phone, or they come in and pay it?
I have them come in and pay it usually. Because okay. If that's the case, I would like them to sign even a letter that says this was for a consult and I'm not representing you, just for ethical purposes, because there's that concept of the cocktail hour client where you're at a party or you're drinking somewhere and somebody asks you a question. Before you know it, the bar thinks you gave them legal advice and that you're their lawyer or they have an understanding. So I just make sure that they sign a letter that says it's for the consult only, and we go from there.
Sure. Do you ever have a challenge with clients not showing up for the appointment? And if so, is there anything that you do specifically to, you know, maybe call them the day before or send them an email reminder, anything that to help with making sure to prevent no-shows?
I get about 20% no-shows, but if they do, they usually schedule, sorry, you know, we ran late, so sick, things of that nature. The true no-shows where they just don't, that's probably about 1 out of 10. So I usually just make the appointment and then they come in.
Okay, so it really hasn't been much of an issue. Okay, so now they've come into the office. Maybe you can talk a little bit about, on that initial call, have you kind of identified at all where they're at financially, or is it really just focused on the issue, making sure that they have kind of a pathway to resolving their case and then just having them come in and figure out from there, or do you do some analysis on kind of where they're at financially and what kind of options you might be able to offer, or do you keep that, you leave that for the in-person consultation?
It usually depends, but I will ask, you know, what they're seeking, and then if they've had a lawyer before. If they don't, how do they get my name, things of that nature. Because sometimes they'll call me before I get the email. And then I'll talk a little bit about finances. I'll tell them what I think the cost typically for the type of representation they're seeking or the type of help that they're seeking. I'll tell them the estimated cost, and then they'll either come in or they won't.
So on most consultations, you will give them an idea of what it costs to retain your services on the type of case that they're working on?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And how do you communicate? Because, you know, one of the things you've done really, really well at over the years is adapting the amount of service you provide to the financial resources that the client has available to you. It's something we talked about a little earlier on the call that, you know, whether they only have $200 or $500, you can kind of help them pay-as-you-go kind of step-by-step unbundled approaches so that, you know, you're finding ways to serve client with, you know, and give them the most legal bang for whatever buck they have. Do you kind of get into that on that initial call? And if so, you know, how do you articulate to the client how that works for them? What do you say usually?
You get into that with them in the initial call because you never know, once you talk to them for a little bit, you won't give them too much time because then you wasted time on a no-pay initial phone call. But you want to let them get to know that you're interested and that you want to really hear a little bit about what's going on to give them some ideas. So you can say, well, okay, you could use a full-time lawyer, but here's your options. I recommend that you get somebody. If you don't get me, get somebody, because in this type of case, you need this or this or this. But that's usually what I'll explain to them, and then they'll determine whether, you know, what level of services they want.
Right, okay. So you do kind of give them a perspective on the various ways you can work with them, but you don't get too far in depth because, you know, I agree, if you get too long wind on the calls, then, you know, it ends up taking up a lot of your day, whereas it really is best, especially when someone hasn't met you yet, it's coming from, you know, a lead, which means that they weren't getting a warm market referral from a close friend or family member. You know, the sooner that they can come in and actually get a chance to meet with you, the more comfortable they are to be able to make a decision on whether to retain your services or not.
Exactly.
And so when they do come in the office, then how do you kind of dive into determining, you know, obviously, you know, as any lawyer, after having some experience, learns is, you know, kind of what exactly needs to be done, the petitions and so forth. How do you kind of structure the types of options you offer? Maybe you can talk a bit about the different types of options that you've offered to clients, whether it be, you know, document preparation, document review, kind of advice step by step. Maybe you could share a little bit about what you found has worked well for you in limiting the scope of the involvement for the clients that maybe don't come in and pay the full representation retainer upfront immediately.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I was asking if you could elaborate a little bit on the types of options that you have offered that are unbundled, for example, document preparation, document review, or pay-as-you-go, kind of giving people advices in the case for those that don't necessarily have the capacity to, you know, come up with the full representation retainer right up front.
All of the above, because, depending on their ability, you say, okay, I can help you draft paperwork. I can give you advice for the hearing. I can prep you for the hearing. You can hire me to attend the hearing. These are the various costs. These are the expected outcomes, things of that nature. Sometimes, for example, a case has been just been filed, somebody's been served, and they want to file a response. I'm like, okay, fine. We'll file a response. This is what it'll cost you. In the meanwhile, that'll give you a month or two to save up for the retainer, because under that scenario, it's a lot of hurry up and wait. So, for example, if a divorce petition or something along those lines is filed April 1st, you may not be in court until June, or your first proceeding may not be until mid-May. It depends on the situation, but most of the time it takes a month and a half to get in. And on an initial pleading, for example, the divorce petition or a custody petition, by rule, they have 30 days from the date that they were served to file a response. So you help them with the response, you get that taken care of, and then when it's time to go to court, then they've saved up, you know, enough or borrowed or did whatever they need to do. And then that way you get some return on your time, and you probably get a guaranteed return customer if they can afford it. Because if this guy helped me for this issue, then he'll help me for the other things. They're not going to go shopping around for someone else.
Right. Yeah, Brad talked about that on a previous podcast as well, just how important it is to have the client start working with you on some form or fashion, because, and maybe you can kind of share your experience if that's been the case or not, but what he's found is that if they start working and he starts preparing documents or doing specific tasks for him, even if it's just the thing that's immediately in front of them needs to be addressed immediately, and then they're making a decision from there if they want to keep working with you, he finds that most of the clients elect to continue working with the attorney with them once he's had a chance to provide some services to them.
Yeah, it works out great that way. It just works out great. And it provides the customer, I say customers because they come from customer service area, but the client, potential client, the customer, it gives them a good opportunity to think, wow, this guy's really interested and he's willing to help me. I used to work for a firm that said $10,000 retainer, that's it. And this works out fine if you have that niche market, but I don't, and a lot of lawyers don't. And so you can always get some investment return on your time, and then eventually they're going to refer somebody to you, or they're going to come back and hire you. And you still make money off of them.
Right. Okay, so for the attorney that's maybe hasn't done these type of unbundled options, they've been traditionally trained maybe in a firm like something like the one that you've described, where they require a full representation upfront retainer, which they then bill by the hour, and is starting to see the writing on the wall, or maybe is going out on their own now and is a smaller firm and is going to be working with a different marketplace, doesn't have the country club type of clientele that can throw down $10,000 in any given moment. Can you talk a little bit about what those options look like and maybe give some insight into how to start thinking about or how to structure these types of packages or options for the folks that are in need, or the types of options that we've been talking about?
Well, structure it again, it's dependent upon their need, but their need, for example, you have to meet with them. You have to figure out what's going on, what the issues are, see what is pressing. You're basically triaging the case. And once you do that, you determine what needs to be done right away, and then what needs to, what can be put off, what the cost would be, and give them deadlines, things of that nature. And so that you go over the different price points, price structures, if you hire me for this or for this and this, that's how you do it. Sometimes you bundle everything. You say, if you hire me for this, this, and this, and this, it'll cost you this much. If you just hire me flat out, right, it's probably cheaper for you and more efficient, and this is what we'll do, and this is how much it is. And they usually appreciate that input.
Right. And so technically speaking, when you're working with the client and they say, okay, I want to hire for this and this, the agreement becomes, okay, this is a limited scope involvement agreement in which I'm performing these specific tasks for you, and that's the limit of the contract, as opposed to I'm now your attorney of record. This is the hourly rate. This is the billable rate. You actually specifically outline in the agreement with the client what it is that you're going to be providing for them for services.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the resistance, or one of the things that attorneys are a little bit concerned about when they're doing unbundled is starting working with a client and on an unbundled basis at a low rate or a fixed fee. And then, the client has all kinds of questions or other things come up, and then they think, well, you're my lawyer, aren't you? Aren't you supposed to be helping me with these things? So maybe you can talk a little bit to how you communicate and create kind of a meeting of the minds between you and that other person to make sure they understand not only what you can do for them, but also the limitation of that scope, given the agreement you have to put together, and maybe perhaps the limited means they might have.
Well, I do that by I make it clear in the consultation, and then if they decide to go with me and hire me for whatever functions they want to hire me for, I spell it out specifically in the limited entry of appearance, or I'm sorry, the limited fee agreement, that this is what you're hiring me, and only for this, and after this, if you, for example, we have a hearing on April 1st, and you're hiring me for the April 1st hearing, my responsibility ends after April 1st when the order is entered, and then you are responsible for yourself. If you want to hire me again, you're going to have to, we'll have to re-enter or enter into another fee agreement, things of that nature. That's how that works out. And so I make it very clear in those settings.
Right, exactly. And usually, do you find that with the models you're working with, I mean, what it really sounds like is kind of a pay-as-you-go, one task at a time type of model, where for the most part, it sounds like you're doing the work, you're still representing and handling the actual legal work, but they're just kind of paying one step at a time. Or are there certain times when you'll just do one thing for the person and then give them advices on, okay, now you go file this yourself. This is what you can expect to court. Is there also kind of a coaching or assisting of the pro se in more of kind of a ghostwriting fashion as well?
It's a little bit of all of the above. For example, they'll say, hey, I need help filing a response. I'll say, okay, fine. I'll write it for you. You're going to sign it as a pro se basis because you are not hiring me as your attorney. You're hiring me to draft this. I'm giving you advice based on what's being filed and a strategy. If you want to hire me, I recommend that you get somebody. Come back and see me. But after this is what we're doing. And then in the fee agreement where they pay me for the for the services, they're clear that they're not hiring them as their lawyer, but they also walk away with a little bit of understanding as to, you know, where the case is at, what they need to do, and their responsibilities and so on.
Right, because I would think most people would prefer, if they could, to be able to, you know, have you do the full response and file it. But it seems like, I guess, it really comes down to, okay, can you afford for me to do all these things? And then at a certain point, people think, well, I can't do all of that. But, and so I guess the conversation starts to have to go around, okay, well, if you can't afford me to do these, and these things, then you have to start talking about what it is that they need to do to just kind of cover some of the, maybe account for some of the hourly that you would be doing for them, where they kind of have to take that on themselves.
They have to take that on themselves. There's right. A certain type of cushion I built into the fee, which includes time spent with them in the consult, time spent with them, you know, explaining what's going on, what they need to do, a couple follow-up questions. I always take a follow-up question or two, but after that, new fee agreement.
Right. And is it kind of a different approach, or is there a different way you have to think about it when you're working with someone where you're doing the work for them and working as their attorney, but maybe just for limited periods of time, as opposed to doing something in which you're then going to be empowering the client to have to do some things themselves? Like, is it a different process? Do you have to give them checklists or things? You know, do you have like things written up that help them understand the steps they have to take after maybe the time that you've worked together, and then they have to do the steps themselves?
Yeah, I do that. I will give them a little bit of advice on, you know, what's pending, what the next step. It's kind of like a legal chess game. Here's where you stand. Yeah. Here's the possible moves they can make. Here's your possible moves. This is what you should do. And I point them in that direction. Because, again, you want to make sure that they're walking away, that they're aware of what their rights are, and that you've explained everything to them. But they're also clearly aware that after this, he's not my lawyer. So,
Yep. And do you have a certain amount of clients that will start out with you on kind of a limited scope, unbundled basis, and then come back and hire you for, you know, for full bundled service? And if so, you know, how often does that typically happen, and how quickly after usually?
Well, it happened about a month ago. She hasn't hired me back, but she's going to. She hired me for a hearing. She didn't do anything that the court had told her previously. I kind of got her through the hearing, and had she not had a lawyer, she would have really been hurt, legally speaking. So we minimized the damage because she didn't do anything she was supposed to do. And then she felt happy about it, and she said, well, okay, can I hire you for the next hearing? I'm like, sure. So she's going to hire me for the next hearing because she really would have gotten a tremendous amount of damage. Sometimes it's lawyers help you in that they tell you what to say or how to say it, not what to say, but how to say it. And to kick them under the table when you need them to be quiet or to not answer in a certain way, that's the benefit of this. But, yeah, she's going to come back and hire me because she realizes the benefit that she got. And so, therefore, she's like, well, at the next hearing, which is probably a month away from now because they set them every 60 days or so, can you please go to court with me? I said, sure, there'll be another fee agreement, and this is how much it's going to be, and sure, come in when you're ready. And that's how that works.
Yeah, is that somewhat common? I mean, because I think a lot of attorneys think, well, if I tell them about the unbundled option, then I'll lose the full bundled case, you know, so they only really talk about it when the people have the limited means and they turn the direction. But, you know, it seems from feedback from other attorneys is that really isn't necessarily the case, is that even if they start work with them on, you know, on an unbundled basis doing limited tasks, that there is a good majority of the clients that once they kind of take some steps on their own and then realize, you know, that perhaps this is a lot more challenging than they originally had imagined, or, you know, the expertise was really, really, they could really definitely benefit from it, they kind of get an experiential understanding that they really need the attorney, you know, you need you to be helping them on a more, you know, full representation basis from there. Is that in your experience, and how's that gone for you?
That's an experience. You don't, I mean, you'll find out in the initial consultation whether they're going to be able to do the full bundled services or if they want to do unbundled services. So they get you in the door because of the unbundled, the way it's set up that way. But a lot of times, you know, most of the time, maybe 50% of the time, they'll end up hiring you for the full, you know, for the full scope of employment. So that's how that works out. You're not necessarily limited to unbundle services, because when you get in here and you explain everything that's going on, they'll hire you. There was a guy that wanted to hire me a couple weeks ago for a hearing, and he ended up hiring me for the whole, you know, for the entire case. So it just depends.
Right. Now, you never can quite tell until you actually have a chance to sit down with them whether they're, you know, how they want to proceed and what's really necessary to really help them get the result they want. And, you know, it seems like once they really get a better picture of, you know, what's involved and what it's really going to take to be able to get the result that they actually do in the heart of hearts want, as opposed to what they would have to settle for if they didn't have an attorney really, you know, on their side handling it from start to finish, that sometimes they're going to change their tune as far as the amount of assistance that they want. I mean, is that, I would assume that's probably what it comes down to, right?
That's what it comes down to. And half the time, most of the time, that's what it comes down to, yeah. It's just informing right. them.
Right. Okay, so I'll ask maybe a couple more questions here that we typically do towards the end of the call here just to get kind of a feedback. And the first would be, are there any technologies or applications, client management softwares, tools they use, Dropbox, you know, Adobe, EchoSign, things like this, that you find that have helped you with kind of streamlining your process or helping you with document preparation? And if, and also, do you have any help or staff that supports you as well?
I have part-time staff, but I usually do most of the stuff. I try to keep my practice so I know what's going on at all stages of the game. And in the past, I've had assistants that just didn't do what they were supposed to do. So I try and stay on top of everything myself. It's a little bit more mm-hmm. work, but I know where I stand, and I know everything that needs to be done, everything that's not done, and where everything is pending, at what point in the process. So as far as I'm not a big technology guy. I have I'll download to my one of my tablets or things like that. I have you know, I have my notifications sent to my cell phone through email, things of that nature. But that's about all I use, the normal things.
I mean, pen and paper is the tried and true way, right?
Actually, yeah, because every now and then when you're trying to get fancy, put it on your tablet, your phone, something like that's not saved properly, put on the wrong day, where if you look at the calendar, you see the red hearing notice or this or that, it stands out much better. So, I mean, there's multiple systems that overlap to protect you, but I like the tried and true big calendar with the red pen. Where that stands
yeah, the at-a-glance calendar, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I still journal on I still use the Moleskine journals, pen and paper, read real books, you know, paper books, you know, not the one, not the Kindle version. So maybe
imagine.
We're just old school like that.
Imagine that. Yes, that works out pretty well.
Right. Okay, and then maybe final question here is, if there's one thing, I mean, you've got, you know, a year and a half, almost 2 years of experience fielding leads, you know, from us. Maybe you could kind of zoom out and maybe give some feedback on either lessons that you have learned over the past, you know, year and a half fielding leads that, you know, maybe from mistakes you made or what you've garnered from your experience that maybe has made the biggest difference in your ability to, you know, be effective in you know, bringing in the clients and having them, you know, pull the trigger on your services from this type of a funnel.
I think the big lesson, it just goes to the whole practice, is that, pay attention, explain to the client what their options are, make it clear what your limited representation would be if you do this unbundled. But the more you explain to them, the more they feel. I make the analogy that if you go to the doctor and they say, oh, bad news, but they don't tell you what the bad news is, you want an explanation. So the other thing is I get a lot of clients that come from other firms. They'll find my name and they'll say, oh, well, so-and-so, I never met with the lawyer. I met with them in the initial consult, and then I never saw them again, and things of that nature. I make it clear that I'm the one who goes to court. I'm going to be the one who reviews every document, and usually I write every document that goes out. And, you know, outside for an occasional typo or something like that, everybody does it. But they'll know that substance-wise, everything is going to be accurate and explained to them. So as long as they know where they stand, they're happy. And I'll say, look, you're probably going to lose on this one, but here's where we can, you know, pull a rabbit out of the hat on this issue or on this issue. And they appreciate that, because I think a lot of lawyers saw false expectations. A firm I used to work for, I won't name, that's a bigger firm. And they would say, so-and-so, I want somebody killed. Well, we can help you out. Just sign the retainer. Well, you know, that's not right. And you want to make reasonable expectations for the client. You want them to say that they expect more than they're entitled to.
Right. I think people have kind of a natural inclination for whether they're being told the truth and whether someone's willing to tell them the hard truth or not. You know, people will tend to appreciate that.
And most of the time, when you tell them that, and if, again, it's, you need to tell them what they need to hear, not what they want to hear necessarily. Sometimes they coincide. But if they don't and they get all ticked off about you, well, thank you, pay me for the consult, and I'll see you later. That's, you know, because you don't want a client like that anyway. So it helps out. So explaining to the client every step of the way where they're at, where they stand, what needs to be done, and so on.
Right, exactly. And I think that another point you made there is for those attorneys that are solo practitioners or very, very small firms, you know, 1, 2, 3 attorneys, it's important to recognize that that's a great benefit to your firm, you know, that they have the ability to work exclusively with you, the attorney, and not some associate they're going to get farmed off to after that initial consultation. And that, you know, that's something that you can really highlight as a benefit, that you are a small firm, you're nimble, you're flexible, and throughout the case, it's going to be a one-on-one relationship between you, between the client and yourself. And I think people really appreciate knowing that the person that's sitting across their desk when they first meet with you is going to be the one that's going to be going to court and being there to take them to the finish line.
That's exactly it, and we appreciate that.
All right, awesome. Well, Les, I want to thank you again for taking the time to jump on the call today, and also just appreciate you for the work you're doing for the amount of folks. I mean, I'd have to go back to do some math, but I'm sure we've sent you hundreds of clients over the course of the last year and a half or so that we've been working together. And if half of them are elected to hire your services, that's a lot of folks that have gotten help because, you know, you've been there to serve them. So on behalf of them as well, we really appreciate everything you've been doing.
Well, thank you. And I really stand by my statement that you guys are great, and it's a good, you know, compared to some of the other lead generators, you guys are very reasonably priced. It's not a contract. You can quit at any time, and you put your money where your mouth is. It's a great service.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We work really hard, and we're committed to your success and every other attorney success that we work with. So I'm glad that's showing in our results as well. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Thanks again, Les, for taking the time today. And for everyone else that's listening, we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks again for listening.
For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.